Perinatal Stories Australia.
Welcome to Perinatal Stories Australia. My name is Rebecca, and every episode we provide a listening ear to the lived experiences of mental illness during pregnancy and postpartum. I hope this podcast reduces stigma, informs listeners about support services available, and inspires those on their own healing journey. More importantly, I hope you can hear these stories and know you're not alone. Thank you for being here to hold space for the stories we often keep to ourselves. This episode of Perinatal Stories Australia is proudly brought to you by Tommy Tippy Australia. Tommy Tippy was founded over half a century ago, born from a mission to make life easier for parents. For decades, they've been designing products that enhance a parent's intuition and engineering solutions to make caring for babies easier, simpler, and more instinctive. You've got this, we've got you. Welcome back, everyone. I'm joined today by the very beautiful Tessa.
Hi.
I'm very honoured she's here to share her story because there's so many components to it, and I'm grateful she's taken the time to come and join me. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's a bit nerve-wracking but exciting. It's a hell of a story, but I think getting this story out here is a really important thing. So yeah, I'm happy to share it.
I'm trying to think where we start your story because your symptoms began really in pregnancy.
Yeah, so I would have been about 4 weeks along when I found out I was pregnant. The pregnancy happened a bit quicker than we thought it would. So I think it was a bit of a shock. And then I developed HG. So that was also like trying to still continue to work, as well as the hormones really starting to ramp up. Was just a massive shock to the system. There was just no warning. It was just bang. It mentally took a massive toll. Yeah, it felt like one thing after another. It felt like it was never going to get any better. And people go, how are you going? And you're like, it could be worse. Like you kind of damn like everyone. And they're like, oh, how are you enjoying pregnancy? And you're like, oh, it's great. It's fabulous. And inside you're just like, this is actually the shit. Worst, the worst experience I've ever had in my life. But you can't say that because, you know, like you think about those people that can't experience pregnancy and you're just like, well, I feel really bad for saying these awful things. But in your head, you're just like, I'm not being true to what other people are also thinking. What happens if you go, oh, yeah, it's really great, it's really great. And then that person is actually like, oh, I must be really different to not be enjoying it. So you might as well be honest. But I was still in that mindset of, oh, no, I could never say that. I can't say that. It's not proper to say those kind of things.
And I mean, that in itself, that minimizing of our own experience or silencing ourselves, that has such an impact because you're just bottling up your feelings, right?
And that's exactly right. And it just kept bottling up and bottling up. And I think that's probably how it all exploded on me.
Yeah, so you experienced, I believe, during pregnancy, anxiety and depression. And
yeah.
I'm wondering how that looked. You know, what were the symptoms like? What made you realize I'm not myself or I'm not doing okay?
Previously, before I was pregnant, I had an extensive mental health history. Like I had depression, I had anxiety. And being a nurse, I was feeling better and I was like, oh, I don't need to do this and I don't need to take this and oh, surely I don't have to do this follow-up. And that really, yeah, bit me where it hurt. So, yeah, I just, you start feeling those symptoms again, like the feeling really low, not wanting to interact with people. You're feeling quite ill, like feeling nauseated. Like when I think about it, the nausea and the HG, you actually think I was more nauseated from feeling so unwell mentally, and it was just a massive explosion of my mental health and me. So the dark thoughts, just everything just came creeping back. I think I was at work one day and I was like, I actually can't keep going on the way I am. I think luckily I have a little bit of insight. Like I know the symptoms, I know it. Like I knew I was unwell. I just didn't know how unwell I actually was. And doing this is kind of like a good look back to see if I can do this. I can pretty much do anything.
And you said how unwell you actually were. You were admitted to an MBU during the pregnancy itself because you were so unwell. And I was hoping you could talk about, firstly, the lead up to that. You know, what prompted that? What supports had you tried before that point? And then maybe afterwards we can talk about what the admission during pregnancy was actually like. But yeah, talk to me about the lead up, because I'm so glad that this is an option for people during pregnancy. Like, you know, I had it postpartum, that admission, but they said to me, you should have come during pregnancy. I was like, well, I didn't even know.
No, and I had no idea this even existed until my GP was like, there's this mental health facility in the next, so I live in rural Victoria, and then the facility I went to was maybe 2.5 hours away from my home. So I started feeling a bit unwell. I think it was 17 weeks when I realized I really wasn't doing too well. I went to him. Obviously, he knew about my past history. We worked really well together with that. And he goes, I'll link you in with the perinatal team. I'll start you on some antidepressants. I was a bit stubborn and I'd said, oh no, I'm not taking them again. Because, you know, you just have that pride of not taking tablets. And in that moment, you're like, no, I'm not that unwell. I don't need to take that. And then he referred me to their perinatal mental health team. So yeah, I had outpatient appointments with them via telehealth. And I think the lovely lady that I saw recognized in the, I think she, we had like maybe 3 sessions or 4 sessions before she goes, I think it's time to do something. I just don't think you're getting any better. I was thinking, oh my gosh, they're going to put me in a psych unit. And like, unfortunately, I'd been in a acute adult before pregnancy, and it was the most terrifying experience of my life. So I was just like, I'm not going. I can't go through that again. That was just horrible. They actually were really supportive of that. And obviously, it does occur to a lot of people. They're just where they are terrified of the thought of going to. And look, I can understand that. It would be like if you hadn't been in a facility before, you would be quite scared to go to one of these places and be around mentally unwell people like yourself, but you just don't realize it at that point. And yeah, she goes, oh, look, why don't you and your partner come down? Just come and have a look, bring your things, and like, you can choose whether you want to stay with us. Obviously, they said, look, this is not, you're not locked in. You don't have to stay here if you don't want to. Like, if you don't feel comfortable, you can go home again. It's all fine.
Can I just confirm, this perinatal team that you were linked in with as an outpatient, they were actually the perinatal team of the MBU that was 2.5 hours away?
Yeah, all in one. It was so good. And so that was all linked in. I went down there and I think I ended up staying maybe like 2.5 weeks. And yeah, no, I cannot fault them. When I was there, there was another girl who would have been maybe a little similarly the same amount of weeks I was. Like, obviously you talk and you chat and she goes, oh yeah, this is my second bub and this is my second time here prenatally. And you're just like, oh wow, like it actually would take such a strong person to go and then come again. Like, I thought, oh wow, she's great. Like, she's recognized it. And I looked up to her and like, you just feel proud to know that people are actually like using the system. And like, it was quiet. There was maybe one other person. And you're just like, why is this system not getting utilized?
Yeah. What was it like being pregnant on a ward that, you know, typically is full of women with their babies? So, you know, normally there's screaming babies and crying babies and, you know, worrying about learning to be a mum. It was a different experience in that sense for you.
No, it was definitely different. Obviously, comparing from when I went in the next time when I had bubs. But yeah, unfortunately, before I went in, I think there was a moment where I had some very distressing thoughts of harming my little bubba. And being around babies, it did start to trigger me a little bit. And they were trying to minimize that for me, but they're like, you know, they were trying to also gently expose me and just a little bit of exposure therapy. It's kind of gave you a bit of, I want to say, like a look into your future of what was going to happen. But like, they had set up activities for you to do. They actually did some to suit the perinatal people as well as the postnatal. So that was really good. Like, you could actually relate to what they were trying to, like, they were teaching you and what they were exposing you to. And it was just, yeah, it was really, it was such a supportive environment.
I know it was, I think you said, about 2.5 hours away from home. Was your family able to come visit? Were you still in touch and had all that support around you in terms of friends and family?
Yeah, so they actually offered for my partner to stay as well. Through all my 3 admissions, they said my partner could stay. He's just not very good with sleeping in weird places, so he went and stayed at a friend's place close by, or or he would stay at my parents' house or whatnot. And yeah, they were extremely supportive. Like, I was glad I had my village. And that's kind of, that's my motto of always having your village so close. And yeah, the mother baby unit facilitated it. Like, it was just amazing. Partners were encouraged, basically. They were just like, this is a part of your healing, basically. This is how we're going to get you to a point where you can go home, is integrating you with your village, with your family, and with your supports. Like, when I had my bubba and I was back there, they were in contact with my maternal child health nurse. Like, they integrated everything. So when I went back into the community, it was all just there and all my supports were there.
I'm wondering what it was like at the thought of going home, at being discharged, because that in itself is, you know, it's scary enough being admitted. It's also scary being discharged when you're feeling so safe. And
yeah, when the day they said I could go home, I was like, oh no, like, I've got to go home. Look after myself. But I also had this like kind of renewed sense of, all right, I can get through the rest of this pregnancy. That's all I've got to do. I've just got to get through. Unfortunately, I still had that negative aspect towards pregnancy, and that was never going to shift in such a small amount of time that I had left. But I was just like, no, all I've got to do is I've got to get through until my maternity leave starts. And then we had things planned for those few weeks. And then I was an elective C-section because I needed the power to choose. Yeah, no, so I had everything planned all up until that point. So I was always doing something. So I was always busy. And so, yeah, they really set me up and gave me the tools to get me through to that point.
And so leading up to birth, following the discharge from the MBU, what was that like? You know, you said you were linked in with some supports. Obviously, not everything is magically resolved, we wish.
No.
But compared to how you were pre-admission, this sounds like there was a bit more hope.
Oh, there was definitely, like, when I went in, there was just no hope. Like, it was bleak. It was very bleak, I have to be honest. But those 2.5 weeks of just, I think, rest as well.
Huge.
Yeah, massive. Who would have thought? But I think, yeah, I think my work had also taken a toll. Just being like, oh, people have been pregnant for years. You can just get through it. It'll be fine. Like, you don't do that much. So you're just like, yeah.
It's not what you needed to hear.
No.
No one needs to hear that.
No, exactly. You're just like, oh, I know you're just trying to make me feel better. And some people do it, like, say things and you're just like, oh, I know you're trying, but geez, that's really just not helpful at all, just really contradictive. And you're just like, oh, that's just gone straight into my brain and I'm going to think about that for the next 24 hours. But yeah, no, like, I was able to go to my work and they go, you know, how are you feeling? You go, like, I'm actually feeling pretty shit, but we've just got to get through these times. And then obviously I had ongoing appointments with the perinatal team through the mother baby unit. I think I had them every week. I was hooked in with their psychiatrist. I don't know if she's still there or not. We had a beautiful psychiatrist. And so I think we did telehealth appointments every week, just kind of checking in, making sure my GP was also my obstetrician. So he was also checking in every, I think I had GP appointments every week. I had midwife appointments. Yeah, I had check-ins with them. So I am a nurse and I work where I gave birth. So I had a massive village of just nurses and midwives all around me for that whole time, and then pretty much post-birth as well. So I had quite my village was quite big in the end. Like, once I started speaking up and once I started saying, look, things aren't right, and they're like, that's okay. That is okay to feel like that is a justified reason, and we'll be there for you.
It's incredible. So if I can go back, sorry, was medication something you surrendered to? Like, how was that relationship with medication at this point?
Look, I'd always had a very rocky relationship with medication. I had too much pride to take it and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they came to another conclusion that maybe my diagnosis was a bit off. And so they did actually diagnose me with bipolar. So that was my new diagnosis.
Prenatally?
Prenatally.
Oh, wow. Okay. Sorry, I thought that was postnatally. Anyway.
No. Yeah. So they were just like, let's try these different medications. Being a nurse, you're like, I don't want to take these medications because, you know, only crazy people take them. And But once I actually took the time to think about it, and like once I started taking the medications at the mother baby unit, I started getting rest. I started sleeping better and they started to kick in. I was just like, I'm actually feeling better. I could see the relationship between all the CBT talk and the medications all working, in my head I was just like, yes, I really need to give these medications a good go. This is going to be beneficial to get me through this.
If I can ask, what was it like receiving that diagnosis? I assume from the beautiful psychiatrist at the MB.
Yep.
Because, yeah, if you've spent your whole life thinking, oh, I'm going to use quote marks, just have depression or yep. just have anxiety, that can be quite confronting, I imagine.
I was gobsmacked. I was like, oh, no, like, I don't have those, you know, what it's explained to us in like nursing school or on the TV, all that kind of thing. But the way it was explained to me, it was, so there's like one pole and that pole. And so one is just like the lows and then the other pole is the highs. She goes, you sit in the middle where you kind of creep your way up, but just you don't quite get to that manic. And like, I didn't know that. I just thought bipolar was bipolar in your... Yeah.
The two extremes, right?
Yeah, the two extremes. And you're just like, oh, like, I don't do that. I can't have bipolar. It can't be that. And I think I did live in a bit of a denial for a little bit because I don't want to admit that. I don't want to say that to doctors and, you know, have them look at me differently. And I think that's probably just the inner negative talk. And
so you eventually did accept that diagnosis?
Yeah. Like, it was maybe a week or so before I went, okay, I'm ready to accept this now and I'm ready to accept that these medications are going to help, no matter what, air quotation, stigma attached yeah. to these medications is.
Like, as confronting as it is, I'm glad they picked up on it and that you were able to get the right treatment to help you through that.
Yeah, same. Because, like, obviously I've been diagnosed with anxiety and depression from the age of 17 and I've been on and off antidepressants and, you know, you're like, oh, it's worked, but it's not worked. And you're kind of like, oh, maybe that's just what it is. And to actually work through that and go, this is why it hasn't worked for so long. I'm kind of proud of it now to go, I'm happy that I have this diagnosis and it all makes sense.
Mm.
And you can kind of accept it from there.
Definitely. Okay, so we've gone up to birth, we've had our elective C-section, and then postnatally things don't magically get better when you have a baby. They're hard work. And even if they're a quote-unquote good sleeper or good feeder or whatever it may be, things still happen. And yeah. that's okay.
Absolutely.
But I'm hoping you could talk to us about your postpartum experience.
Yeah. Like I said, I had my little beautiful baby, Tommy. He is now 9 months old. Yeah, it was interesting. Like, you don't really know how hard it is going to be until you have a baby. Working in that area, I was like, oh, you see all these mums and they're doing so well. And you're like, oh, see, it can't be that hard. You know, in your head, don't say that out loud, but in my head I'm just like, oh, I know what I'm doing. I definitely didn't know what I was doing. And they send me home with this beautiful baby and I'm just like, what do I do now? Like, and then just obviously those couple of days after birth, the hormones all just kind of stirred up again.
Mm.
And it all just went a little bit wrong again. So like, he is a good baby. He just wasn't much of a sleeper. So I think that also took a toll because I'm one of those people that needed a good amount of sleep to function.
And I mean, yeah, sleep is such a huge, huge thing, especially when you've experienced mental ill health. That's the number one thing I think a lot of psychiatrists try to protect is your sleep. And then I guess the hormones after birth. It's always, oh, it's just hormones. But reality is that hormone drop, as my OB explained to me, is the equivalent of however many years of menopause in one day. Like, we cannot underestimate the impact that that can have on someone, especially, you know, if you've got a history with mental ill health, especially if you're susceptible to hormonal changes or anything like that, plus the lack of sleep. I wish we didn't minimize that as a society because the toll it can take is just, you can't put into words, really.
No, you can't. It's just, yeah, it is a whole new world. And you'll get some people go, oh, yeah, you're just tired because it's been a long couple of days. Like, this was maybe 4 or 5 days post and I got a visit from one of our maternal child health nurses. They're like, yeah, no, it's just fine. You know, it's just coming down off that high, you know. And I was like, I don't remember being on that high.
Yeah.
So you're just kind of like working through that and people telling you it's just baby blues. And I was like, after 4 days, I don't think, like, surely it would maybe after a couple of weeks, but after such a short period of time, the adjustment was just I just couldn't cope with it. Like, it was just, yeah, it's just a horrible little time.
Yeah. I was going to say, was there a particular moment that, I guess, stands out to you in your memories about realizing it's not baby blues, it's not like that, it's something more?
Yeah, like, I remember sitting on the couch with him and just, like, looking at him and just panicking and saying, I can't look after this little baby. It was just the moment that was just the anxiety just peaked. And it was, I think, the mother of all freakouts. My poor partner was there watching me unfold. And he was just like, I didn't know how to help you at that point, because it was just all just overwhelming, that overwhelming. And grief also, like, it was grief of losing my, I felt like I was not myself. I'd lost, I was watching my friends. They were still doing what they wanted to do. They were still going to work. Work was my safe haven. It was where I wanted to be, and that's where I went to listen to other people's problems and not think about my own, which was, yeah, probably not the healthiest coping mechanism I do get, but yeah, just like being home with this baby and then the thought of my partner going back to work and you're just sitting there holding this beautiful little baby and you're going, no, I can't do this. Like, I can't do this by myself. How am I supposed to do this by myself? And everyone goes, oh, no, you'll get used to it. It'll come naturally to you, and you're just like, no. So, yeah, and then obviously that was picked up by a couple of my friends who were going, are you okay? Like, I'm like, no, it's okay. It's just, I'm just really tired, you know, like just the normal. But then I did start to notice the deeper it coming through again, like just feeling sick, feeling lethargic. I actually think I had this cold. I think it lasted like nearly 3 weeks. And that's when I sort of noticed, like, am I getting run down? Or is it the depression?
Yeah.
And so, like, it's really hard to differentiate, because sometimes that's how it presents. And so, like, you keep pushing. And, like, I was formula feeding. I chose to do that from the very before Bubba was born, because I was like, unfortunately, I had seen too much from when I was working. And, like, you'd see these poor mothers and they were just pushed and pushed and pushed to keep breastfeeding. Oh, this is what's best for your baby. This is what you have to do. And I was just like, no, actually, I don't have to do that. And he is no different to any of the other babies. And so my partner was able to get up and feeds to help me get to sleep. But I think at that point it was just a little bit too late.
And I mean, I just want to comment and say, like, well done you for recognizing your own needs, mental, physical, emotional needs, and making a decision that's best for that. Because that, looking after you, is looking after baby. So
exactly.
Well done you. My next question is, things aren't going well. Your partner's noticing these things. Your friends are picking up on things. What's happened next?
So I'm still being followed up by the perinatal team at the mother baby unit. I think my partner had the phone number for the lovely lady that was looking after me. And he's going, not sure she's okay. Like, he was kind of thinking, I think he even needed that support to say, I don't think she's going very well. I need help. And which was great that he could recognize that as well. He's very switched on, obviously, and very good at reading people. Yeah, so I had appointments with them, the psychiatrist, my GP, and I think they pretty much all collectively agreed that it was probably best to go back to the mother-baby unit with my beautiful boy Tommy and, yeah, have a bit of a stay and pretty much learn how to be a mum and cope with your mental illness.
How did that feel? You know, you've done the MBU during pregnancy. It's then come up again that you need to go down this road. How did that feel?
I think I cried for like a good nearly 12 hours. When I was there prenatally, I said to him in my tummy, I was like, we're not coming back here. I promise you won't have to, grow up and have your first couple of weeks here. And that's what shattered me the most, was I felt like I was going back on a promise that I made. And it actually still hurts me to this day. It shattered me. I don't think I was actually functioning at that point. I think it was just a bit of a shell of a person and just trying to push through for Tommy, because I had to, but I just had nothing left. And obviously that was the only place that was going to be of help.
So how far along postpartum were you when you were admitted back to the MBU?
I was actually maybe 6 days, so I didn't last very long at home. So I was, like I said, I pushed for maybe like a couple of days before I was just like, no, And then it all just hit me, then did start to accept it when I think a multitude of things was going wrong, and we just, it was a kind of snowballing and there was just no stopping. So there was only one place we needed to go, our little safe haven.
And how long were you there for this time?
I was there for, I think, 3 weeks. I think most of my stays have been 3 weeks.
And very different to your first experience, because your first experience in the MBU, you were pregnant. This time you've got Bub with you and you have to learn to be a mum in addition to looking after yourself yeah. and recovering.
Everything going on in your head plus a baby.
Yeah, that's not easy at all.
Yeah, there's not a lot of room for the self-care, and you think, I can't fit any of that in. Like, how am I going to do that? But actually them teaching you that it is actually possible is just amazing. But yeah, definitely different to the prenatal admission. Obviously the first 3 days they took Bubs away and actually just allowed me to sleep the whole night, because they just say, oh, sleep is just the best thing. And then you have those 3 days of just restorative sleep and, oh, you feel $1 million after that. It's just, it's amazing. At the start, I was like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. I've been sleeping fine. And it's just, you know, having a newborn. And as soon as you got those days of sleep, you're just like, no, I don't know how I was functioning, but thank you very much.
Yeah. So did that require extra medication to help you sleep, or were you able to fall asleep on your own?
No, I've never been a falling asleep on my own person. I've always required a little bit of medication to help me, and that's fine. And I've accepted that also.
Yeah.
And yeah, it also is just accepting that help of, I need something to help me sleep. It's not the worst thing in the world. It's a short-term thing. It's going to be fine.
And you get sleep out of it, so.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sometimes I think, oh, I could go back and just have those 3 nights of sleep. That would be really good. Yeah, no, like it's, and they set you up and they'll help you like overnight. They said to me, they're like, oh, we can do this for you. We can do this for you to like ensure you get like a good block of sleep, but you know, you're still trying to care for Bubs over the night. And I was really shocked when they said that. So like, we're going to work together to build me up to be able to cope with everything. Yeah, it was certainly different from that last admission.
Today's sponsor, Tommy Tippy, knows that for every newborn baby, there's a newborn parent too. As a parent, you already have the innate skills to care for your baby. For decades, Tommy Tippy has been designing products that enhance a parent's intuition and engineering solutions to make caring for babies easier, simpler, more instinctive, and enjoyable. Their message is simple. You've got this, we've got you. If you don't know where to start, you can shop their all-in-one bundles featuring a curation of their best bottle feeding, breastfeeding, sleep, or nappy disposal products. Every bundle has just what you need, nothing more, nothing less. Visit their website at tommytippy.com.au to shop a range of equipment for the naturally equipped. Did you feel as confident when you were discharged compared to the first time?
Not as much, I think. I might have pushed myself to try and get myself out of the unit a little bit too quickly.
Mm.
And I kind of got that false sense of, oh, yeah, no, I've got this. I need to go home. I need to get my life into a routine. I've got to do this and I've got to do that. So I think I put on a bit of a brave face, and that didn't get me very far. But, you know, like we put on this bravado. We're like, oh, I can do this. I've been given the tools. I can do this. I've just got to practice it. And then when you get home, you don't practice it and you don't do the things they tell you to do, and it all just kind of crumbles again. These are the life lessons we have to learn, unfortunately, the hard way.
Yes. Before we talk a bit more about what that discharge was like, what coming home was like, how was the group therapy? In addition to learning how to be a mum, what was that like? And was there anything that you took away from that first postnatal admission?
Yeah, so their groups were amazing. I think I've done them maybe 3 times. I think I've done nearly all their groups every admission, even prenatally. And all 3 or 4 of us would come, we'd have our babies, like, you know, we'd all be in kind of similar places, or like some of us would be just at the start, someone would be at the middle, or someone would be at the end. And you're kind of sitting there and you can see, like, you'd be at the start and you can see these women and they've got their babies, and you can tell they're so close to being confident and just like so close to being Yeah. I won't say happy because that's
ready.
Ready.
Yeah.
Ready to integrate back into the public. And yeah, and you're just like, so it is possible. It is possible to get to that point. Yeah. And then you see a person that's just about to leave and you're like, wow, is that what that looks like? I'm going to aim for that because that's where I want to be. I want to be at home with my bub and my family and all my supports, because being 2.5 hours away is just ridiculous. Like, I know the support of the nurses and all that kind of stuff is really good, but nothing beats your village and the people that know you best. But yeah, no, the groups you cannot follow. But I think we did, like, you know, like mother crafting and cognitive behavioral therapy, a lot around like the negative thoughts, learning how to change the way you're thinking, which is a massive thing for me because I'm a massive negative self-talker. That is my downfall. And so they explained it. You literally are trying to retrain your brain to think, because you've been thinking like that for so long, you're going to have to do a lot of work. And they were right, actually. I'm sure they'd love to hear this, but they were actually right about it. And yeah, after doing that, like doing the work and going to these groups and going to your psychiatrist appointments and reviews, yeah, the benefits were just huge. And like, it'd be terrifying. Like, you'd rock up to these groups and just sit there and be like, oh, if I say something, are these people going to judge me? Are they going to take my baby away if I say something? And like, I sometimes have verbal diarrhea, so I would just say things before I think. And so sometimes I say things and I'm like, oh, I really should not have said that. Like, and then I start getting on that anxiety. Oh no, this is going to happen. This is going to happen, even though it remotely will not happen.
But it's believable.
It is. Or you'll say something and then like someone else will chime in and go, oh yeah, me too. And you're like, oh, it's okay. It is actually okay to feel like this. It is okay to have a laugh about it.
Yeah.
Because this is how you're going to get through, is to, you know, to work through it together. I don't know any of the women that I was in there with. Unfortunately, I just don't think I was in the headspace to make like a connection with them that they have helped. Also, they were probably a massive factor of me getting better, is just bonding with them over just the admission and where we were at in life. And even though we were all from different walks of life, our babies were different ages. Like, it was just, you all bonded, you all worked and put in the effort for these groups, and you talk about your babies, you talk about your life, and you talk about all your mental health adventures, and yeah, you talk about all these things, and it's talk therapy, and it makes you feel better because it's just another human being that's exactly like you, and these things just happen, and you're only human. That's always my takeaway. Like, you're only human, and it's unfortunate, but it's happened, and you just got to work through it.
So on that note, you've been discharged, but you didn't work on it from what you've said. Is that okay? But no blame on you. It happens.
No. I think I'm going to put full blame on me for that, but I definitely did not work on it. I think coming home, I was kind of rushed because I thought, my poor partner, he only had 6 weeks off after Bubs was born, and he has not seen him at all. And so then all the negative thought, I felt guilty. I was like, I'm keeping my baby from my partner, from my family. How could I be this selfish to take him away and only working on myself and only doing things for myself? And I think that also was the next thing that sent for my second admission.
And so what was the gap between the discharge and the next admission?
It was only a month. And even when I went back in, they said, we thought you would be back. And I was like, okay, thanks, guys. I love the confidence. But I'm glad that they realised that, because I think when I went back in there and they said that, I was like, I think I need to work on it.
And I was about to say, like, even as much as the professionals know, okay, she might be back, until you know it yourself.
Yeah. And like, I had those appointments over telehealth, and yeah, in that month of that short month, they saw it and they're just like, it's just not, I don't know what, they hadn't clicked, or I was just too focused on the themes of just like guilt and just not sharing my baby and not being in that happy, you know, everyone says the joyous newborn period of, oh, how beautiful is it? And I was like, oh, I've got to go home. I've got to go do all these things. I've got to keep my house clean. When people come over, I've got to cook. I've got to do everything. And yeah, no. And then I've got to work on myself. I've got to do my mental health homework. And
it's a lot.
And yeah, you'd sit in your house, you'd look at things and you go, oh, I've got to do that. And then you never do it. And you're just looking at it. It's just piling up and piling up. And you're like, I should be able to do this. I don't understand why I can't go vacuum or go do the dishes or cook a meal or those kinds of things, those basic things.
But your functioning goes when you're in that state of mind, really.
Definitely. And it was just, yeah, I had no, and Tommy had decided that he would only contact nap at that point. So he would not tolerate being put down for sleeps. So he maybe contact napped for maybe 20 minutes or 30 minutes at a time every 2 hours. And so I was just like, how do I get things done?
And I think that's the thing. Like, even if you have perfect mental health, no one can keep up with baby raising, clean house, perfect, must do all the things, you know. And then when you have mental ill health, it's like, oh, well, other people can do it. Why can't I? Well, no one can do it, but we tell ourselves other people can. And it's horrible. But, yeah, like you do. You lose that functioning. Things that are little, like even the thought of me taking a shower felt too much. I was too tired. That just seemed impossible. Washing the bottles, sterilizing the bottles, trying to put bread in the toaster, like these little things just felt impossible.
Most definitely. It was just it seemed just so out of reach. And then when you're feeding Bubs or doing those quick contact naps, I'd be on my phone because I was like, well, there's no point shutting my eyes. It's just going to make me feel worse. And then, yeah, it goes on a tyrant of what if I drop him? What if I, yeah, all those kinds of negative thoughts. And then you go on social media and you see those beautiful people with their beautiful babies and their beautiful houses. And you're just like, how, like, why is that not happening for me? I should be able to do that. Why can't I do that? And like in that headspace, you can't rational, like, with yourself to say, that's actually just a picture. At that moment, you're just like, you're just stuck and you're just like, is this what the rest of my life is going to be like? And you just see no other way out.
And so that dread and that hopelessness had come back, which premeditated the next admission.
Yeah.
Okay. Question. How did it feel being told or realizing, okay, I need to go back to the MPU?
Actually, I think at that point, I definitely accepted it, that it was another necessity.
Yeah.
There was also guilt of again taking my child away from my partner, who then had to go back to work.
Mm.
So he wouldn't see us. He wouldn't see Bubs. He wouldn't be able to create that bond with him. Like, I'm in there trying to work on the bond with my baby, because at that point, prior to that admission, I couldn't hold him. I couldn't look at him. I couldn't feed him. I couldn't do anything with him, which is horrible. And I would never wish that upon anyone.
But it's a reality for so many of us when you're in that headspace.
And yeah, it's okay to admit that. It's okay to say these things out loud, because this is what helps other people.
Yeah.
And yeah, I couldn't do anything for myself. Everything was very, very dark at that point. And then to have people say, oh, you know, I think it's probably time to go back and try and get it all back to normal. And I was like, yeah, but what's going to happen with my relationship? Like, obviously, I have a beautiful, supportive husband, but at that time, you're thinking, he's going to leave me. He's going to hate me for taking Bubs away again. They're not rational thoughts at all, because obviously you have a very supportive partner and they're going to do whatever it takes.
That's wanting to make sure everything and everyone else is okay before yourself, right?
Exactly. And it's just, he'd come home from work and I'm like, oh, yeah, I've managed to cook you some dinner. And like, you're looking after them, you're looking after Bubs, but you're not looking after yourself. And then at that admission, I realized I do need to start working and taking time for myself, because you cannot look after Bubs if you're not looking after yourself and you're not doing that self-care. It's just not a viable thing, and it's not how you can't live like that.
And what did that work look like? You know, you said, I realize I have to put in the work. What did that work look like for you? And, you know, how did that turn things around?
I think, obviously, like I talked earlier about working on the negative thoughts, like I always had thoughts of, I'm not good enough to be his mother. Why would I think I could do this? Yeah. Those kind of things. Like, I need to be doing this. I need to be perfect, basically. Everything must be perfect. So yeah, and actually learning to accept that it's okay that there was a little, they said, good enough parenting.
Yeah.
I think it's drilled into me now.
It's such a game changer.
Oh, it is. And you realize, you're just like, what do you mean? I only have to give 30%. 30% of yourself is good enough parenting.
Yeah.
And you just realize I was running on maybe giving 100% of myself because that's what was expected of me, air quotation marks. That's what's expected of us and that's what we have to do and that's just normal. But it's not, and it's not reality. And I think the more we tell people, no, it's okay, that's just not a viable thing, and you can't keep pushing yourself to do that.
And I think perfectionism is such a barrier for so many of us in motherhood. We've probably spent our whole life up to that point relying on perfectionism and going above and beyond and making people happy and all of that. And when you become a mum, learning to not be perfectionist is confronting. But I remember that good enough parenting that I learned in the MBU was just, you know, when you realize that they're okay and they'll actually be better off and you'll actually be able to give more of yourself to them if you dedicate some of that percentage to yourself.
Yeah.
You know, it's huge. And I think it's why, like, good enough parenting, or I should say the circle of security parenting program, is such a big part of an MBU experience, because reality check
is
so, you know, it's huge, and I can't recommend it enough, and I'm really glad that it stuck with you as well.
I was going to say, yeah, I recommend it too. Like, I have friends that have just had babies as well. I do like to tell people, I like to educate people around me, because I just don't want people to go through. And like, I understand people are still going to go through it, but I want people to know that there is light at the end of the tunnel. It does get better. We've just got to, you know, just got to yell a bit louder for the people at the back. We've got to tell. But yeah, no, it's just, you've got to check out the circle of security. I just say to them, it's a game changer. And like, my local maternal child health nurse, they actually run the circle of security. And like, I didn't know that. Like you say, you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I just recommend it to everyone. Like, even if they're not facing like a mental health crisis, or maybe you don't really struggle with mental illness, but, you know, having a baby has just put a bit of pressure or just brought up some feelings. Like, it's such a good thing to go to. So you cannot recommend that enough either.
And there are so many like local community places that run Circle of Security. And yeah, it's one of those things I wish more people knew about, or I mean, ideally, you know, it would be nice that we could go into parenthood not feeling the need to be a perfectionist. But yeah, I think it's so valuable that it is there to help challenge some of those unrealistic expectations that society creates and that we internalize.
Definitely. Yeah, you don't realize how powerful social media can be as a negative, but it can also be a positive.
Absolutely.
So it's kind of like, it's working that balance of being able to see something on social media and going, well, that's just set up to look nice and like, you know.
Yeah.
But it's also to go and see someone who has been brutally honest about it all. And then, yeah, like recommendations, like, seeing things pop up on your Instagram from Cope or from like you popping up in our Instagram feeds, just putting up something, and you're just like, yes, actually, no, I can relate. Something relatable to people like me struggling. It just gives you that sense of being, and you just know someone else gets it.
Yeah, as you said, you look at beautiful pictures or you look at quotes and you take that on board, and it hurts.
It does.
It really
yeah.
hurts when you're not feeling that way. But learning the skills to be able to, okay, that's not going to serve me right now, I need to look somewhere else, or whatever that may be, that is a skill.
That is also a learning thing that we should learn.
Absolutely is. But yeah, there's also the beautiful side of social media, where you can have these beautiful communities who are just willing to be open or just validate whatever it is you're going through, even if it's a very different experience to your own. And, you know, I can absolutely understand the not so great relationships with social media and the massive impacts that that can have on our expectations, our sense of self, our identity, our, you know, everything. It impacts so much. It has so much power.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, massive.
Yeah, okay, so second postnatal admission, you'd gone in the really not so great headspace. What was it like being discharged this time?
This time I felt this was actually going to work. Like, obviously things were still a little bit rough around the edges, but I had actually put my mind to it. I said, no, this is the last time. We're not doing this again. We are going home. We're staying home. And we are having good family times. So that was my goal. I was just like, I just want to be with my family. I just want my partner and my bub to be able to bond together and just, yeah, try to enjoy what was left of his newborn stage. But, yeah, no, like it was just, it was terrifying, but also really, it was just also amazing to leave. And just look back on the like the journey that I had been on to get myself to this point. And you look down at this little bubba and go, we're going home now and it's going to be all okay. And taking in all those groups, all those the lessons of being good enough parenting and realizing and going and obviously having to put that into play when you get home is obviously it's a hard thing to do. But I think once if you've got that determination, that drive, you're feeling better, you've had sleep, you're on the right medications, you're talking to someone frequently, you're going to start feeling better. And it's just a whole new world.
And I guess very different to the last admission when you were just, I guess, rushing to get home.
Yeah, it was just, it was an amazing difference between that first admission and the second one and going home because I had done the work. Like the nice people had told me to. And no, for doing the work, putting it into practice. And before I was discharged, they said, we're going to do some trial nights. I had overnight leave. My parents were only about an hour away from the mother-baby unit, so they kind of let me go there instead of going all the way home and then coming back. So I had some overnight leave and just to try and reintegrate myself back into what a normal household would be. And that was, they were scary. I think I cried a lot. That's just normal. I think baby and I cried together a little bit. But yeah, no, it was, it's a scary thought at the start. I think once you start thinking only one day ahead at a time, I think that first admission, I was thinking to the end and going, yeah, that's where I need to be. But if you start working on one day at a time, you can go 1 hour at a time if you really need to.
Oh, yeah.
That's where I started. Yeah, you go an hour, then the next hour. Yeah, by that time the day was over and everyone was still alive at the end of the day. So it was always a good day.
And obviously, you know, as we've said, you're never perfect when you're discharged. No. Things aren't magically fixed. What's your recovery looked like since, you know, your treatments, your care and your support teams? What's the work post-admission now that you've not been in hospital for six-ish months now, I think?
Yeah, I've actually just been discharged from their team. They've deemed me well enough.
From the outpatient team?
Yep.
Oh my goodness, congratulations.
This is what happens when you put in the work. Basically, just it's really just working on yourself and those thoughts, the thought processes. Like I am a very regimented person, so I wanted to have a plan of the day. So implementing, like, taking the dog for a walk with bubs, are we going to do this, then we'll go see friends, we'll go see family, that kind of stuff. I would be at home and my partner would say, oh, let's go away for the weekend. And so that's something to work towards. So you go, I've just got to get through these couple of days. The days roll around. You get this beautiful little weekend away with your little family and you just keep working and just you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be, yeah, and you're just working with that internal dialogue and just obviously working with your support team, just, yeah, making sure you follow up all your appointments, you take your medications, you have your time. I used to feel really guilty about leaving Bubs with his dad and I'm like, well, actually no, I need this time. Yeah, I think once I went to go get my like a facial or something and I was actually in tears, I was crying because I was like, I don't deserve this. And by the end of it I was like, no, this is a justified self-care time, and it is definitely something that everyone should like try and factor into their week or their month, whatever is applicable to them, because it's just, it's a lifesaver and a sanity saver.
Definitely. So you've just been discharged from the outpatient team. Are you still in touch with the psychiatrist? Are you still seeing a psychologist? Like, what are we doing now?
I am now seeing a private psychiatrist and a private psychologist.
Yeah.
So they are just as lovely, of course. Mm-hmm. They specialise in postnatal recovery. So basically, as bub grows, everything changes. And so we'll work through the milestones. Like the other day I had a session, it was because my bubs has now just started, he's crawling. And, just working through those kind of little things like milestones and enjoying the milestones instead of just saying, oh, that's just another thing to tick off. He's doing this, and not focusing too much on he has to do this by this time and he has to do this. And I think we also put too much pressure on ourselves and our babies to do things on time when people say that they have to do it.
Yeah.
And that's also another hard thing to learn when you like things perfectly. And
yes.
So it's definitely been a big theme with me, needing like a reminding and just working on not putting too much pressure on and just letting him work out what he wants to do and when he will do it, because he will definitely doesn't do anything that he doesn't want to do.
No.
So just, themes around like of that, you know, and I've just gone back to work and not feeling guilty about going back to work and not feeling guilty about putting him in daycare and things like that, because I didn't like people taking him from me to do things their way, because it was all done nicely and we figured out a pattern. We got really comfortable. And now this new thing where I went back to work and it's just changed everything again. So you've got to learn to adapt. And, it's a massive thing. But he absolutely loves daycare, so that makes it so much better.
And what was it like for you going back to work? Like, is old perfectionistic Tessa making a reappearance?
I have changed dramatically. Like, obviously, being a nurse, you're still caring. You want to do the best for your patient. But you also realise it's just, it is a job at the end of the day. You obviously love what you do, but you go home and you see your little bubba and you go, this is what I'm working for. This is the little person that I want to care for and look after. And I was really career driven before then. I wanted to work my way up and I wanted to be this person. And I did a postgraduate before Tommy was born. But I have no interest in doing that anymore. This is my first week back and I'm just like, this is definitely not the Tessa I remember at work. I would take so much work home with me, and then now you just leave it at the door. And
that just shows how far you've come in such, I'm going to say, a short amount of time. We're talking maybe a year since your first admission to the MBU during pregnancy. That's huge.
Mm.
And credit to you for doing that for yourself, for your family, and prioritizing yourself to say, I need help and I'm going to work towards getting better. That's not an easy thing. So, all credit to you for that. It's huge.
It is massive. And it's amazing to come on here and talk to someone. You just realize how much you've actually changed and how far you've actually come. And it's just, I think it's one of the proudest moments of my life is looking back and going, I did make it through all that. Even when I thought I didn't, and when I said I couldn't do it, I've done it, and I will continue to keep doing it. And you're just so proud.
And you should be. Looking back, you were reflecting, and I could hear it in your voice. There were times when you were saying, that's the biggest hate I had for myself, was taking Bab away from my partner. Do you have a bit more empathy for that version of yourself now, looking back?
Yeah, I always kind of look back and I think, I really thought that was what I was doing. Like, I was taking someone away, I was being awful, and I was being selfish, but I was actually just trying to work on myself. I was trying to get through that little section of myself that said, no, you can't do that, because that's going to impact someone else, when in fact I really was just trying to look after myself, to look after other people. So I definitely, you look back and you go, oh, I wish I'm definitely have a bit more understanding.
And those negative thoughts, are we getting less less attached to those?
Oh, look, yeah, that's also still a work in progress.
Of course.
I think that's going to be for a lot of my life. Like, you still look at that pile of washing and you go, I should do that. But then you're just like, actually, it doesn't matter. Who cares? It'll get done eventually. Someone will do it. If you can look at something and think, I'll do that later, or it doesn't matter, you've grown.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your big, big journey. I mean, yeah, I'm sure it's not the end of your journey. Like, I'm sure there will still be many ups and downs, but listening to your story compared to what you were originally feeling and going through to hearing you speak about your experience now, like, all credit to you, and thank you so much for sharing so openly.
Thank you so much for letting me come on and talk about it. It's just, yeah, you always want to, you want to put yourself out there, you want to support others, and you just don't know how to, you don't know where to start, but this is amazing. And yeah, you should be so proud of yourself, because this is just, this is beautiful. And I think a lot of other people out there would actually say the same.
Thank you to all our listeners for holding space for today's story. If you like this episode, please leave a review and rating to help me bring you more amazing content. Join the conversation and be featured on the podcast by sharing your story through my website, perinatalstoriesaustralia.com. If these stories are a bit too much to listen to or to read right now, then come back another time. Protecting your mental health is the number one priority. As always, this podcast and its associated blog and social media accounts is not a substitute for therapy or for getting help. No medical advice is provided, only lived experiences. If any of this does resonate though, please reach out to a medical professional. See you next time. Thank you again to today's sponsor, Tommy Tippy Australia. Sign up to become a VIP, a very important parent, and get 15% off your first order. See you next time.